nerves are strained as the company of U.S. soldiers trudges tenaciously toward the dense urban center on a crisp December night in 2031. Days earlier, a harrowing 9-week firefight concluded with these weary warriors wresting control of the route that now leads them into the sprawling foreign metropolis. Yet, even as the dust settles, caution remains. There is a strong suspicion that the retreating enemy either has or will release toxic chemicals as a repellent. And intelligence reports revealed a dilapidated warehouse at the opposite end of the reservoir they are now approaching to be its likely source. The plan is to deploy special environmental sensors that can detect toxic industrial chemicals and materials and determine the source of their origination. Developed by Erdc's Understanding the Environment as a Threat Sewer Network Investigation Package, or UET-SNIP, these high-tech devices allow for early detection of illicit activities. Despite having them in hand, the soldiers need a way to deliver these sensors to key locations within the reservoir without putting any personnel at risk. That's when they turn to Muddy, an autonomous mapping robot also developed by Erdc as a low-cost vehicle capable of producing 3D maps. Muddy's combination of high quality and affordability makes it a perfect solution for deploying in dangerous situations. The unmanned ground vehicle makes an initial pass through the reservoir to map it and determine the best placement for the sensors. It then makes a second run to carefully position those sensors exactly where they are needed to provide environmental surveillance and enable a confident go, no-go decision. This superior situational awareness helps leaders keep warfighters safe in an unknown environment.
Muddy was born in 2017 to provide 3D mapping capabilities at a much lower cost than commercial systems. Developed as part of the multi-operational, wireless, ranging, and low-power LIDAR Exploitation of Subterranean Structures program, or MOLS, the idea was to provide usable data on a platform that could be easily replaced if damaged during deployment. Muddy has since evolved through 7 versions and counting. It has added many tricks, including sensor fusion, autonomous movement, object recognition, 3D path planning, and the ability to see through dark, fog, and dust. Because it is platform agnostic and can be modified to carry many different payloads, Muddy is often used to test more expensive robotic platforms and to enable other projects, such as SNIP. Its combination of cutting-edge technology, affordability, and flexibility makes it an ideal system to validate new technologies and to operate in extreme environments.
I'm Chris Kiefer, and filling in for Megan Saxton today is Tim Reeves. And this is The Power of Erdc. Our guest today is Dr. Gary Glassbell, a research chemist at Erdc's Geospatial Research Laboratory. We talk with Gary about how Muddy's evolution has allowed it to solve a diversity of 3D mapping challenges. Hey, Gary, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And Tim, we're glad to have you today, too.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Tim works with me in Erdc's corporate communications office, and he'll be filling in for Megan today.
Thanks for calling me off the bench.
Good to have you.
Yep.
Gary, I want to start off talking about the story of Muddy, which is kind of an interesting story. Take us through that. Talk about what led to its creation and how it's grown through the years.
So the concept of Muddy started with actually an Xbox Kinect. It was that whole gaming sensor that you could dance and it would record your movements. I had saw something online that it projected a bunch of points, and from that point you could generate depth. I had a pair of night vision goggles from my previous project, so I immediately looked at the Xbox Kinect and verified it did do a bunch of points, and it was called Structured Light. So Structured Light put out a series of points, and then deviations in that pattern was how it used to generate depth. That was like the initial...
I was going to say, let me stop before you go too deep into it. So start with the Xbox Kinect. Why? Like, what kind of led to you looking at an Xbox Kinect and kind of saying, what can I do with it?
The initial problem that we were looking at with Muddy is how to use a low swap seat, low cost, power, weight solution to perform mapping, surveying and mapping, and to do that with the smallest error possible. So the whole idea was, can we use almost expendable sensor payload to put onto a robotics platform to be able to map and survey things like a hand-dug tunnel where you may not be able to get the robot back?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was okay if it was a little more expendable, but still get a good product was the idea.
Right. That was our very first thing. It was like, can we get the, for us, we wanted the RMSE below 10 centimeters. At the time, 3D LiDARs were very expensive. They were like 15K. They've come down in price since then, but this is like around 2016. And then the idea was we didn't really want to put expensive sensors into those type environments.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the premise. And then what led to you looking at an Xbox? Take it from there.
Once we figured out that the Xbox could generate depth and it was capable of using its position, using what it saw to track its location, we actually put that on a Roomba base. This is like initial proof of concept before we even wrote a white paper on can we do this. So we had an Xbox Kinect on a Roomba and had it running around mapping. And I was like, hey, this actually worked. We did it at universities. We ran it in hallways. There's a really great picture of it at the mount site at Fort Walker. And there were a lot of jokes like, oh, is it cleaning the floors or is it mapping the area? But once we had
mapping
that
and cleaning.
And cleaning. That's right. It's a multi-purpose robot. But once we had that like initial concept, then we put it together. The first effort it was involved in was called MOLES. There's a W in the acronym. It's silent, but we called it the MOLES platform. Alex Lee.
As I say, Tim just had to power through that one on the intro.
These first acronyms were pretty rough for the robot.
But anyway, so I'm sorry, as you were. So go back into MOLES now.
So for MOLES, we were trying to generate that proof of concept that we can use these sensors. We can generate these point clouds on the move. We were comparing them to stationary systems to prove its accuracy. We did a number of tests with that. Alex Lee was responsible for early in the program getting us what was called the ground vehicle robot, the GVR bot from GVSC, which is the Ground Vehicle System Center. The GVR bot was the first tactical robot. That one did not clean floors, but it served as a test platform. We've been coordinating with GVSC since the beginning of the effort. And if we could get our stuff working on that platform, then it could work on essentially other platforms. From that initial Xbox Kinect, the Xbox actually released a second version of the Kinect, and that didn't use light coding or structured light. That actually used time of flight. And the advantage was the time of flight was the structured light didn't work outdoors. If there was a competitive light source like the sun, it couldn't resolve those patterns. But with the time of flight camera, we were now able to extend our capabilities from sub-T interior surfaces to outdoor environments well. And then we went to stereo cameras. We went to generate depth. We've tried 2D LiDARs. We've tried 3D LiDARs. We had a whole slew of cameras on the robot. We've had RGB cameras. We had fisheye cameras. We're even now running thermal cameras. In addition to unique sensors on top of that, we've had IMUs. We've had ultra wideband as an initial test where we had little anchors set up to monitor the robot's position as it moved. And probably the most interesting one was we tested a 3D ultrasonic sensor. And that's just on the hardware side. And on the software side, we've had visual odometry solutions. We've had LiDAR odometry solutions. We added IMUs to that. So visual inertial odometry, LiDAR inertial odometry. We had one feeding the other as a guest frame. Then we reversed that. Muddy eventually became a modular test platform.
As someone who's seen this from the birth, as you look at it, what are your feelings as you see this thing go through its different iterations? And How was it enjoying watching this thing grow up?
Looking back on it now, it's a lot different than as we were coming through, because it was always seemed like there was a new problem to tackle. And how do we tackle that problem? Like, how can we improve the accuracy? How can we navigate and path plan in 3D? Looking back, I can say that Muddy has always been a team effort between all the Erdic labs, primarily CERL, ITL, we're even working with CHL. We've had a number of people work on the project from GRL, and we've had a host of summer interns every year. We've had interns working on it. It has been a team effort. I look back on the tech reports that we've done, and I look at all the names, and I was like, oh, wow, that was really good work that was done for this problem. But as the problems change, we were very reactionary in the beginning. And now, as it's set up as a test platform, as a modular test platform, we can see those challenges. We have enough experience and things that we can like pull off the shelf, like, oh, let's try this combination or let's try this combination. And it's always very exciting to see how it does in demonstrations and getting feedback from soldiers and users when they test it.
Yeah, Gary, I want to get into capabilities in a second. But before we do, can you just paint a visual picture? And I know the way Muddy has looked has changed through the years, but for listeners to kind of have in their head, can you describe what it looks like right now?
Right now, our most current iteration, it has front and rear cameras. These are thermal cameras. They set mid-center and front and rear. The thermal cameras produce a grayscale image, but there's enough thermal emissivity from the environment that you can still use it for driving. We mainly use the cameras for feature tracking or object recognition, and that helps the robot localize, and we can project those things in 3D space for the user. And also on top of it, it has a 3D LiDAR. It's a spinning LiDAR. That's the highest thing on the robot. We typically also have an IMU somewhere on the robot.
And what it'd say, what, maybe it's about 2 feet tall, roughly? Yes. If you kind say, of going yeah. down to the ground. Okay. And then going down the ground, what it's got a track base. So it's got track wheels. And then the camera's built up on top of it.
Right. ITL has a great fabrication shop, and they work to condense everything and get all the wires managed and cable management and power figured out. It's a nice system that can be unbolted and bolted on to different robots or changed as we need to.
Yeah, yeah.
We talked about, you know, the size of it and the scope of it, and I guess that plays into its capabilities. Talk a little bit about, you know, Muddy's capabilities and really how those capabilities fit into the mission set.
Muddy, as I mentioned before, it was initially to generate a 3D point cloud of its environment with as highest accuracy as possible. Consistent throughout the effort is we've always assumed that we would be in a GPS-denied environment. We've always assumed that the comms would be degraded and we wouldn't be able to process things on the fly. So the robot really needed to do it itself. And we've always wanted to do situational awareness for the user. So be that a 2D map that the soldier can look at and use it to drive the robot or see obstacles around the robot as it's doing its mapping mission, or upon the robot returning, it can then show a 3D point cloud of the environment or a mesh of the environment. That's the other product. And today, it focuses on localization and SLAM. So localization is essentially taking that 2D map generated from a previous run, and it can figure out its location on it. We can do it with 3D point clouds as well. We can also do simultaneous localization and mapping. So that's the robot's on its very first run. It's creating that map as it goes, or it can update an existing map. Like an example for like the test usage case, Ahmet from Rio wanted to do a site survey before the construction equipment went out onto the field. And for that site survey, the robot had to basically do like a lawnmower pattern to be able to produce a really high fidelity 3D map of the environment. And then it also, we needed to pause the robot's navigation stack, so that we could do a ground penetrometer. Now, we can't put a ground penetrometer on Muddy. It's way too big. Muddy's too small. But those concepts of the lawnmower pattering, the generating the point clouds, the pausing of the stack for the ground penetrometer to run. That was all initially tested on Muddy. And then the Rio team took that code and adapted it to the bigger robot. But we did it first on Muddy, and that was for our PC-24.
So bring up a good point. I mean, my understanding is one of the primary uses of Muddy today, or at least currently, is kind of as a test platform for other robotic systems. Is that accurate? And if so, can you kind of expand more on that?
Yes. Muddy has been involved in a variety of projects over the years. Again, this is from 2016. The very first one was mapping odometry within structures with low SWaP-C efficient UGV sensor payloads. After that one, we did a project called ULEAP, which is another acronym that contains an acronym. So it's UGV localization and 3D path planning. That was a Flex 4 effort from Searle that tied into Rio as well.
And Rio stands for Robotics for Engineer Operations.
So with that effort, we, instead of path planning on 2D, we focus on path planning in 3D. And that's important when you're doing terrain shaping, because the environment's changing. We want to be cognizant of dirt piles that are creating, where if they're small enough, the robot can drive over them if it needs to, but not avoid them if at all possible. Also, with the idea of 3D navigation, the idea is if you set like a waypoint on a bridge, for instance, in a 2D perspective, you can't determine if the waypoint's supposed to be on the bridge or below the bridge, but that is much easier to do in 3D, where you can specifically path plan in 3D to say, yes, I want the robot to go under the bridge, or I want the robot to go over the bridge. And then it also was involved in the sewer network interrogation program, SNIP.
Yeah, so we talked about the top of the show, right?
That was its most recent demonstration for RDAX 24. And Muddy, that platform is the same size as our test platforms, but it was adapted to drop sensors in the sewer network that it was mapping.
I do have a question about the size of Muddy. We talked about it. You mentioned a minute ago about a sensor was too large for Muddy. Why is it important to have Muddy remain small, compact? And I know, you know, we talked about subterranean missions and stuff, but why is it so important that you keep it in that certain profile and as a test platform?
Well, for SNIP, specifically, it's designed to go into the, like, 24-inch and 36 diameter pipes. But even for Rio, which traditionally uses larger vehicles, testing the autonomy stack can be dangerous with the larger platforms. So we can modify and tune our obstacle avoidance on the smaller platforms. We can get the users aware of how the robot's going to perform and what's expected of it, and then change it to the larger platforms. Most people don't tense up when Muddy is within a foot or two of them, but a much larger platform like the J8, which is like SMET size, you get a little, you're like, is it going to stop or not? Or is it going to run over me? So we can test those scenarios on the smaller robot, and it makes it easy for us to transport to different labs or transport to other things. Even for Dambot. Dambot was a previous podcast that you did.
Yep.
And Muddy was there at the Mojave Dam with a bigger swimming Dambot robot, and it mapped a 300 meter tunnel as part of Dambot.
Oh, okay. Okay, sure. So we talked about its use as a testing platform. What are some other uses of Muddy through the years and today?
That's a good question. We've also used it with GVSC. We've done joint collects with them at Camp Grayling. That was a really interesting test. It was right before the pandemic, and there was snow in the tunnels. So we've always wanted to go back and continue mapping because there was snow blocking the tunnels and we didn't make it all the way through. But Muddy is also fed into the GVSC has a robotic technology kernel, RTK. But they have a special version set up for the smaller robots, RTK Lite. And Muddy has transitioned code to that RTK Lite database as an option for when folks use it.
Gary, how does a research chemist like yourself get connected, no pun intended, with the previous story of how this started, into this robotics world in the development of a program such as MUDDY?
So my previous project was generating a non-pyrotechnic tracer. And initially that effort was very chemistry-based on creating different phosphors that could be applied to the back of projectiles. In the scope of that work, the effort transitioned to putting LEDs on the back of projectiles. And I think that really gave me the confidence to start looking into microelectronics, working with Raspberry Pis, microcontrollers. Working on a back of a round, you have limited space, similar to a small robotics platform, you have limited space. You have limited power on the back of a projectile. You can only have so much power on your robot as well. I really think it was working with those electronics that gave me the confidence to start tackling working in robotics. And we even built early in the project, it's in one of the tech reports, we took a rangefinder, which gave one point of distance, and put it on a XYZ pan tilt gimbal and created a 3D LiDAR to see if we could possibly do it. It was really slow. It took like 3 minutes per scan, but it really gave us insight into how the LiDAR is operated. And then, for instance, the spinning LiDAR on the robot, as it moves, the point cloud gets skewed because the robot's moving, the LiDAR is moving. So we found it was very important to de-skew that data before we try to do something like ICP or iterative closest point matching to use the LiDAR to figure out what the robot's pose is.
So Gary, we talked about the ability of MUDDY to hold multiple platforms and it's kind of a small platform size. What other capabilities of a robotic system are you able to test on this small, inexpensive platform like MUDDY?
So the MUDDY platform that we currently use offers different configurations. We can have wheels. We like wheels. Wheels don't vibrate as much as tracks. Wheels can also slip, though, in certain environments, like for Rio or something, or for SNP, we definitely prefer tracks. Another version of the tracks is it can have flippers as well. So the flippers help the robot navigate stairs. Early in one of the demonstrations for Digital Squad, the robot was teleoperated at the time. And to get them into the tunnel system. So the con-op was soldiers were investigating a building. They found a hidden tunnel and then they wanted to put the robot in. The tunnel system had a lip. So we had the flippers set up on the joystick. So if you hit the flippers, they would slowly rotate forward and then bring the robot into the tunnel system and navigate. But we were handing the controller over like before the demo got started. And the flipper started, and the button got hit, and the flipper started rotating. And the first thing the person did, rather than hit emergency stop, which was another button on the robot, is they pulled the battery out. And the command had still been sent, so it was still rotating because they didn't get the command to stop. And the other soldiers were making the joke that Muddy got a set of 10 push-ups in before we got the battery back in. It reconnected, and then we could hit stop. So wheels, tracks, flippers. Also, since it's platform agnostic, we also do a lot in simulation without a robot at all. That was a major emphasis during the COVID years when we started really looking into simulation. But as part of SNP, we simulated that whole mock sewer system as a simulated environment to test different LiDAR odometry approaches and visual odometry approaches to get a solution that would be able to map that tunnel so we could send it back in and drop nodes. But all that initial work was done in simulation.
And I guess too, because we talked about it's relatively low cost and small size, I guess it's much less expensive to deploy MUDDY in a test environment and to, I guess, increase the number of simulations and testings that you're able to do versus a larger robotic platform that may require more personnel, more transport, so forth. So you can get more repetition, I guess, is the best way you could put it out there more often.
Yeah, for any new use case or test scenario, we try to do it in simulation first to make sure, you know, it's giving the mapping accuracy that we need, if it will account for the terrain features that are there, if we can get away with mapping in 2D, or we have to move to 2.5D or 3D for navigation. And then we can easily transfer it to the larger platforms. And then we test on the larger platforms with that code base. And then we also have to adapt parameters for the larger robot. robot, if we want to account for a turning radius or velocity commands, or if it wants to, if it's differential drive to get it to rotate in place.
Gary, why Muddy? How did Muddy get its name?
Muddy got its name actually during MissPix 21. So this was a fourth.
Stop you right there. MissPix, for people who don't know, is, I'm trying to think what the acronym is, but it's basically a big experiment where soldiers test out different technologies.
Yes. It's an event where we have to train soldiers to use the robot, and then they operate the robot itself. MissPix 21, there was a autonomous component where the robot had to map a simulated meth lab. But then there was also a tunnel component where the soldiers wanted to teleop the robot through the tunnel system for situational awareness of what's in the tunnel, looking for objects of interest. When we train the soldiers on the controller, there's a turbo button. Now, we never use the turbo button for mapping. We always take it nice and slow.
Never touch this button.
Never never touch it.
Don't touch this button.
if you run it really fast, you know, sometimes it can affect the accuracy of the map if you're going too fast. But the soldier's like, we don't have a lot of time to make a really nice map. They mash down the turbo button and then map the whole entire sewer system, the tunnel system. And then when they brought the robot back, since it had tracks, it was like caked in mud, and we're just looking at each other like, whose rental car are we putting this in to take it back to the airport? And that's how Muddy got her name.
Speaking about Muddy and how it's become almost personified, it's almost got a life of its own. The U.S. Army Geospatial Center has helped tell the story, I guess, of Muddy with a fun social media campaign called The Chronicles of Muddy, which you can follow that hashtag on Twitter and such, and I do, and those are always fun and interesting to look at. Sadly, Doug Caldwell, who was kind of the brains behind this campaign, recently passed away, but I know the work you're doing and others still seek to honor his legacy in telling that story in a fun way. Tell us about the campaign, how it kind of got started, and really its mission to spread the word about Muddy and its capabilities.
It all started when Doug was sitting on one of our meetings, and it came up about Muddy the robot. He was like, the robot has a name? Doug was a very charismatic individual. And as soon as he heard that the robot had a name, he had this vision for these tweets about Muddy. And I really think that just reading them, you can see his personality behind them. It has been infectious. GVSC, when we took the robot up, they really got into it too. There's a post between their robot. They have a quadruped robot called Blue, and they have our Muddy robot. So initially it was just going to be a group shot between the two, but later they got the Blue angled down, posing, looking at the robot. It's a really great post. And then some of the comments have been hilarious. There's one about Muddy being a lifelong learner in the library. And one of the comments is like, that is not the AGC GRL library. There's too many books in there. The U.S. Army Engineer Regiment has retweeted some of the posts that Doug put up.
How has that campaign or having fun with it kind of turned the science of it and the capabilities of it into, you know, real world conversations? Because I know that those kind of handles, those kind of campaigns really spark conversations, spark interest. And how has that campaign really helped?
I think we've gotten two new customers that want to use Muddy as a base platform. It's still in the early stages. I'm sure you'll see more on that later if we can continue to the tweet series or the Chronicles of Muddy posts. But it has led to new opportunities, new customers. It's really always nice to see when we go to something like Project Convergence or MissPix. You're like, is that the Muddy robot? It's like, oh, wow, okay, you've seen the tweets. And then Jordan Klein has set up a robot community of practice. And I'm really angling to try to get Muddy as the mascot for that community of practice group.
Nice. Gary, you talked about this a little bit at the top, working with different labs. Tell us more about how much you've worked with different labs, collaborated, and how Muddy has benefited from some of that cross-lab collaboration.
So Muddy's really benefited from the cross-lab collaboration with ITL. They have a great fabrication shop. Chuck Dickerson, Richard Brown, They have been instrumental in getting all the payload, the batteries, the sensor mounts, and all those put together, and then making it functional where we only have to unhook a couple wires to transfer it to something else. Also, in regards to cross-robot collaboration, like CERL and ITL, they have Muddy robots, so we can generate code. We typically do it in a Docker container, which is similar to a virtual machine, but you don't have to allocate the resources. But it allows us to develop in that container and then transfer it to these other platforms so we can push their code for their project and they can test it before if they want to integrate it into their robots. And also, we've been collaborating with Spicer Bach over at Coastal Hydraulics Lab, and we've been adapting Muddy's navigation stack for uncrewed surface vessels. So it's a little different. So instead of having the sensors point out, we had them point down, and it was detecting the shoreline. So when the USV, we did this in simulation, but as the USV got closer to the shoreline, it would say, okay, this is an obstacle on the occupancy grid, so stay away from this, turn back around, and navigate out to deeper waters.
And then SNIP is an environmental lab project as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah, it's part of Crystal Woodley's UET effort, understanding the environment as a threat. And it has been the closest project to adapt Muddy in its entire functionality, like using the same size payload. But ITL has adapted even that to drop sensors along the platform. Between EO and ITL, they have these sensor payloads, and they drop them in the tunnel system. And that was demonstrated at RDAX 24. And we just had a demo last week with C5 ISR soldiers learning how to operate the SNIP robot and drop sensors.
Did you ever think a Kinex on a Roomba would turn into what it has now, where you're deploying sensors, you're mapping battle spaces for the warfighter, you're sending in a robot through subterranean tunnels, you're putting flippers on it? Did you ever think that it would get to this point in such a short period of time? I mean, in the world of development, I would think just a few years, it's expanded greatly.
Honestly, no. At the time, I never thought it would get to this point, but we've had many, many great researchers involved. They're working on the various projects and contributing code to Muddy, and it has really been impressive, and seeing how the students grow, the summer interns working on them coming in, like they're, you know, intimidated at first, like this is a lot of code and work, but they jump right in, they produce it. And we've had a lot of great collaborators throughout all the labs. I mean, this has really been a ERDC team effort to get the robot where it is now.
How have you been able to fund Muddy's development? Who have been some of the stakeholders that have helped come alongside you and your team as you've grown this from concept and ideas of a gaming system on a Roomba to today? Who have been some of the bigger supporters?
So the initial funding of part of Moles was under the umbrella of the GeoIQ effort, which was Geointelligence and Complex Urban Environments. That was where it initially got its start. ULEAP was the Flex4 funded effort, and then the other efforts have been, like for Rio and SNIP, have come from CERL and ITL.
Talking about the field tests, you mentioned last week's field test, and I was lucky enough to be able to come and watch you all go a little bit and see Muddy in person, which was pretty neat. Tell us about some of the field tests and the lessons that you've learned. I guess part of it, and I know last week was soldiers using it, and when maybe other people use it, I guess you see how they use it. It's maybe different than how it is in your head, and I'm guessing you pick things up from that as well.
Yeah. Our very first test was Digital Squad, and that was where the robot was teleoperated. And from there, we've done collects with the ITL folks as part of Dambot. We've done with MISPIX 21. We've done the autonomous collection. That was a big change in the navigation, letting the robot map on its own. The soldiers liked that they could essentially put it into a building and then come back, do their other mission, come back, and the robot was just there at the door waiting. It was actually even part of Twilight Tattoo, the music festival, ceremonial music festival that they have in DC. They had a booth set up for Muddy on display, and people could teleop it. We cut the speed way down to it. Also, that's another one of those collaboration points. ITL developed what's called ERDC Safe Teleop. think of it like a like when you're teleoperating it like a joystick, but when it sees an obstacle, it slows down and eventually stops. So it prevents the robot from running into things even when you're teleoperating it. We've done Mispix 24. We've done Project Convergence 24. Dragon Spear, Ardax Dragon Spear was the last one with the sensor dropping. And then the very latest one was with the soldier training from C5ISR. And I still think we have one of the nodes still in the tunnel that we have to get out that we dropped.
Oh,
these soldier touch points that you have and all these demonstrations, how important is that? And how has that made Muddy better?
We've learned that it's vital to keep it as light as possible. I mean, down to ounces. If we can remove a couple ounces, it makes the soldiers' lives much easier. We've also had to focus on speed for situational awareness. They want to run the robot and get these products back as quickly as possible. So, you know, in post-processing, we can clean them up later, but try to get them as accurate as possible, as quickly as possible has always been, you know, a major motivator for developing these solutions.
Gary, talk about the customers that you've worked with Muddy and how that customer base has grown and evolved over the years.
Our biggest and longest standing customer, I would say, is GVSC. They have the robotic technology kernel set up for a robot platforms. They have a special one for smaller robots that was called RTK Lite. Muddy's code exists in that database, but we've done joint collects with them through the years and through the tweets and posts and Chronicles of Muddy hashtags. Our customer base has grown. We have two new customers now, and we're working to develop solutions for them. So stay tuned for those.
Nice. And speaking of staying tuned, you've had 7 iterations, but I'm guessing you're probably working already on Muddy 8.0. Talk about kind of what tweaks or modifications are on your wish list and what you kind of see in the future.
So version 8 is going to be our first ROS 2 platform that leverages a robot operating system, second iteration. ROS 2 was a complete rewrite of ROS 1. So in a sense, it's essentially starting over, but we're taking the lessons that we learned and the code that's available and adapting it to ROS 2. One of the things that ROS 2 promises is a much more hardened system. And we also have a version 9 in the works. It's going to be our largest Muddy robot yet. It's the largest platform that we've tested on.
Physical platform?
Yes. Okay, largest wheelbase physical platform. That one will be a lot of fun.
Thanks, Gary. It's been a great discussion, and we appreciate you joining us and taking time to talk about Muddy today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
With advanced 3D mapping, sensor fusion, autonomous movement, object recognition, and visibility through dark, fog, and dust, Muddy is well suited for the toughest conditions and environments. Delivering cutting-edge technology in a lower-cost platform, Muddy is an ideal testbed to validate other robotic systems without tremendous risk. It can also execute a wide variety of missions that improve national security and public safety, from military reconnaissance and disaster response to infrastructure inspection and installation maintenance.
The Power of Erdc podcast is a production of the U.S. Army Engineer Research and Development Center. Follow Erdc on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X for the latest information. You can listen to the Power of Erdc podcast on all major podcast players. Visit powerofertcpodcast.org for more resources. You can also contact us at powerofertcpodcast@usace.army.mil. That's all for today. We'll see you next time.